Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have some announcements here first off.
Okay.
If you can breathe, you can do yoga. And twice a month, Yoga for Sangha sends out yoga videos grounded in the themes of awareness practice and especially designed for Sangha. The videos include movement options to accommodate all levels. A new quarter of this popular offering begins October 15th, and all proceeds will be donated to the Africa Vulnerable Children Project. Reflective Listening Buddies offers awareness practitioners unique support. It requires participants to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter of this popular program begins October 15th. And do you find that your efforts to keep commitment are sabotaged by conditioning? Our Keeping Commitments Buddy program, also starting October 15th, pairs participants with a buddy for accountability and support. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, please press star 6 and then 1 to make guest show. And a conversation of about 5 minutes and on one topic is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think that covers it. I think we're ready.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Roberta. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Hi, Roberta.
Hi. Wonderful. So I've been, I'd say, adjacent to this community and working with and not trying to understand about the voices and egocentric karmic conditioning and all of that. And it's somewhat miraculous. And there are times when I still feel like the weeds are growing back or something. Earlier today, this is what sparked the call. I was just washing my hands, and somehow there was just a witness there, and I went, oh, the hands are being washed. I don't know by who or which hand is washing which one, and it was so simple, and it was so luminous, and I had this nice French hand soap and everything, and I didn't really feel that I had to do that anything was good or bad about what was happening. So I just wanted to share that. And also, I have been observing that when I've had a day where a fair amount of critical voices are operating, and if they're louder and they tend to take over and the same things, like washing one's hands, it becomes kind of miserable because the voices are going, you know, look what a mess your place is and stuff like that. So whatever I do, like sweeping, I'm kind of trying to avoid the voices. And it's kind of silly to say, but I do experience it. But what I've realized is that I have a day like that. The next morning I wake up and I feel really lousy. I feel sometimes depressed or restless or things like that. And then luckily I have medicine, like some of the teachings you and the guide have given us. Then I know what to do, but I'm just really observing this because then I kind of have to tend my wound or something, but maybe that's good. So I just want to share these observations. Also, when I start observing things other people do or that's happening in the world, and if I get judgmental, then I realize I also start judging myself. And then when I'm judging myself, then I wake up and feel lousy. So Thank you.
May I ask you a little bit about that last bit? Because there was such a, there was so much in what you said, but in that last place, so what I heard you say in that luminous experience was this crystal clarity that the hands were being washed. You talked about it as a witnessing consciousness, right? Like a,
right.
a pure witnessing. And there was this sense of not knowing who it was or what was going on, but it had a quality of light which was joyous, which was luminous, you said, right?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Then you started to tell us a little bit about how in the place of observation, you are aware that when you have a day where the voices have been extremely loud, you notice a certain different kind of experience, whether it's the voices are talking to you or the voices are talking about someone else. The experience is not that luminous lightness. It's lousy. And then I heard you shift a little bit because you went from being in a place of observation to being the recipient of the voices, not noticing, but experiencing them. Were you aware of switching from a place of witness to a place of victim of the voices, of the system?
I don't think I was, honestly. But you know, you're saying that helps remind me, because I think sometimes I just feel clobbered and I'm not quite going, oh, I'm doing that. Because usually that will subside, but I think it was more...
Right. Well, the reason I asked you is that the way you are practicing with noticing the voices, bringing conscious awareness to what's going on, right, to the suffering process, and seeing with such clarity when there is suffering and when there isn't suffering, right? There's such a, that place of observation is a very different place than feeling that place where the voice is coming at me and I feel a certain way because I'm listening to and believing the voices. You can identify with the person who feels clobbered. And the only reason that I'm pointing that out is because that then becomes the place to bring in the witness, to bring in not just the witness who can see the hands that are being washed, but the witness who has compassion for the person who is being clobbered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's a movement we also make in practice. We make that movement of just noticing what the voices are doing, but who are they doing it to? And so when I see the person who is victimized by the voices, then I can move to that place of compassion that can often get between the person and the voices. And it's an affectionate witness, but it has an active role, right, to
right.
end the suffering.
Right. Right. Yeah, so that's nice to know. And I think also one thing that sparked this with the question is that I've had this repeat over and over. I mean, often many moments of either just of justness, just this kind of experience. And also times when I do stay in the center as the witness sometimes when the voices come in, but you can see that otherwise they don't. So honestly, I think there's some part of me that thinks, oh, it'll be all over. I'll just dust off my hands and everything. I'll always be in the luminousness. it's humbling. It's humbling to see that these lapses happen.
Yes, it is humbling, and that's a place in practice, right, where we first of all, we never noticed it, and then we begin to notice it, and
right.
then we get some distance from it, and then the way it morphs is, because you know how to get distance from it, you've got to get distance from it, and it never's going to happen again, right?
Yeah, exactly, that's the whole
thing. And so, actually, the fact that we witness the lapse happening and then change our attitude to the lapse not as a lapse, but a gift, is the maturity mm-hmm. of the practice. Because mm-hmm. we understand that, I mean, we can make up all kinds of meaning about it, but it isn't arriving somewhere. That's not, mm-hmm. well, if you arrive somewhere, you're dead. But, you know, that place of life is an unfolding. And that mm-hmm. unfolding for us is an encounter and a transcendence, and an encounter and a transcendence. And at first it feels like the chickpea in the pot, and you wail about why you're being roasted and flavored and seasoned in this way. Mm-hmm. And then you relax into the process of there's nothing wrong with the fact that it's an encounter and a transcendence. It's just simply how it is. It's not a mistake. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing to be fixed or changed. You surrender to the curriculum of life because life is having that experience. And it's right. enjoying the experience of knowing itself in so many different ways and encountering what prevents it from knowing itself and then going through that in order to see itself again, right?
Yeah, that's very helpful to reframe it as that this is a moment, this is an opportunity. It's not a time to start beating myself up going, oh, well, you were doing good, but now you blew it. That's the perfectionism that...
Well, and importantly, again, right, to catch it, you are not beating yourself up. There is a system that is beating you up. You don't... The whole point of practice is not to identify with that system. So we catch ourselves when we say, oh, wait a second, I keep beating myself up. Nope, I don't. A voice in my head does, but I don't. And mm-hmm. I feel lousy. To reframe that to, I am listening to a voice in my head that is talking me into an experience that I don't need to be having. Mm-hmm. That shift in labeling what we're not and calling it out is so important to get a deepening sense of what you are, which is that witness, that illumination, that pure witnessing. Yeah? And what is being witnessed can either be a beautiful piece of French soap or an identity in death throes throwing a tantrum.
Yeah. And I think just the ability to have come, even if the tantrum happens, just to go, oh, well, that happened. I guess I'll pay attention to that. Yeah.
Yes. I can see what the voices are doing, and let me interview the person who's caught in that, so that I can move not to a place of ignoring, avoiding, judging, not witnessing that person's suffering experience, but let me find out, let me be interested in how that aspect of me can be liberated.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Roberta.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Roberta. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. It's Lucinda in California.
Hey, Lucinda.
Hi. So... what I've been noticing just today is, well, no, you know, it kind of dawns. So it's there, and then it leaves, I don't really notice, and then it's back, I notice this thing. And what it is there's so many people right now are going through the most difficult of possible times in their life, like the most challenging circumstances for them. And what I'm feeling is that I am a hair's breadth from something like that happening in my life at any given moment. Like I feel I don't feel connected to their suffering. I understand their suffering. It's so hard for them. And I'm feeling also in myself this awareness that they're but by the grace of God go I. You know what I mean? It's that, it's at any given moment, it's that close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's,
yes, it does seem to be that way, right, Lucinda, that, and I project, especially in your line of work, you are encountering people who are having this experience. Mm-hmm. And the heart is, there's plenty of compassion for that. And I project that there's a certain way in which that compassion doesn't have to be personal. You don't have to suffer with in order to have compassion for.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's what I'm feeling. And at the same time, I'm feeling, maybe it's just an awareness of our fragility that's new to me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Because I think that even if you don't, within quotes, suffer with, what it brings is the experience of that fragility, right? Because if all of a sudden, for some reason, everybody is facing their worst karma, that is, that they have to face whatever that is,
right?
Then it sort of starts to dawn on me, wait a second, maybe I'm going to face that too, which kind of then puts the ego on that fear alert process.
Right.
And so we teeter between that balance of the awareness of the fragility, which then gets so taken over subtly as, what if that happens to you?
Right. That's it, for sure. And, there's part of me that feels confident that I have faced a challenge of that magnitude as I'm seeing other people face, and I do feel the depth that I didn't think was there in order to be there for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful. And I can feel part of me going, oh, yeah, you think so? You know,
don't say that.
Right.
You're going to be tested and you'll find out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, such an interesting place, right, Lucinda, because we do, the image that drops in is, it's like if you think of intelligence as many layers, when you hit an abyss of an experience, you can feel the cone has gone that deep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's also an awareness there's a further depth you could go, right?
Right, yes.
And so the shock of encountering an abyss the first time is a very different experience than if you encounter the abyss multiple times. Because you've learned a lot of about your ability and adequacy to traverse the depth.
Right.
And there's always the question of, well, I don't know if I'm going to come out of the next one. But it's not hubris, but there's confidence, right?
Yes.
I know I have tools. I have a support system. I have the ability to draw on resources. I understand that we pass through several zones of annihilation in order to discover what is indestructible. So I even know that. And so I feel somewhat prepared for this eventuality, but there's a dose of uncertainty.
Yes. That's life, I guess. That's the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So beautifully. But thank you.
Thank you.
Gotcha.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for joining us, Lucinda. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, good evening, Ashwini and Michael. Yes, I'm now live on the air, and I just love the role of the conversation. what I've been seeing is that it is that witnessing that has been happening in my life, and it's just happening more and more. So it starts to feel quite continuous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, doesn't it? And then that's an interesting... Say more, Janice.
Well, it seems like I don't get so lost in a conversation about something and find myself distracted. I find myself actually pretty present most of the time. If that's undulation or a little wobble or something, it's just included in the whole thing. So it mm-hmm. still feels like witnessing mm-hmm. because I'm noticing yeah. that wobble.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it's a, sort of like include, expand awareness and include.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, Janice, that what you're describing is a stability in awareness, right? Because oftentimes, if we're at the first stage of practice, it's you're identified most of the time, and occasionally you find yourself present. And then as you keep practicing, the it shifts, right? So there's an oscillation between being identified and being disidentified, and we can swing in either direction. But then there's a stabilization of the attention on the awareness that the thing or the input has to be really, really big and different and startling to completely throw you off into identification. It just is a wobble, and the wobble gets included because the awareness just expands.
Yeah, and I was saying undulation, and I think it is an oscillation. I think that's a better word to express it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and so let's see. It kind of refers a bit to just the last conversation of noticing that in places where I'm... Okay, maybe I'm, you know, I have to go to my head and compare to the past. You know, growing up and as a child, I was extremely empathetic. I don't think that has gone away. But things would make me cry a lot. Like, it's a lot. And now I can hear the things and just, I can hold it in my heart. And I don't get thrown by it because I know life is going to present me with something in the next moment, and I don't want to be caught sort of totally off kilter and in a conversation. Does that make any sense?
I think so. It reminds me of the Zen story of the guy who says, "Is that so?" Right? Mm. It's not that there isn't a total presence to what's going on, but there's just not a conditioned story that gets attached to what's going on. So you would imagine if somebody approached you and said you were a well-known Zen priest and had a great grand following, and somebody came and accused you of fathering a child and taking advantage of a girl, you'd be completely upset. And his only response was, "Is that so?" Right? It's not mm-hmm. pointing to that level of dispassion almost or holy indifference, right? It's not that it's not a place of complete involvement and open-heartedness, but there is an awareness of what is also yours to do and yours to respond to.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and because I know that there's always something for this being to be responding to. Life is, I'm living my life and life is living me. And I find that if I'm in my head about a conversation, what's going on for like everybody else or what I projected is, then I'm really not living my own kind of reality anymore of being present.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're talking about it in the RLB call this morning, right? Which is that ability to be totally receptive and reflective receptive and reflective, and therefore it's really, really being attuned to the pulse of your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of threw me off was the other day that somebody actually said that maybe I was depressed. And honestly, I feel really content. And that was one of those things where I thought, well, maybe yes, maybe no. And I'm not sure where they're coming from. But it does feel that my life, whatever experiences I've had, and it hasn't all gone smoothly at all, but they've led me to being in a kind of more step back perspective of everything is possible, and I just want to be here for whatever is here for me.
Yeah, I don't know if this is your experience, Janice, but I remember having this experience of paying complete attention, right? Complete attention in total stillness and being accused of being checked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because mm-hmm. the conditioned projection on what engagement looks like is not rapt attention.
Right.
Right? And so that same place where we actually have to look at it and go, is that my experience? And am I really depressed? Because what that tells me, again, with projection, clearly I have a lot of information about the other person. Now let mm-hmm. me check to see whether or not that's true for me. Right?
Right.
So you'd be curious about that. And it doesn't feel like that. I just feel very content. And mm-hmm. if that contentment is a twinkle rather than a bubble, then perhaps that signals a lack of life force for someone else. But it doesn't for you.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just, it wasn't like I went after meditation to have some sort of result. There was just that willingness to wake up every day and I guess even if it's, you know, it's not conscious that I want it to end suffering, but the willingness to wake up today and every day and just see how it will unfold. It's just like living in curiosity without my mind made up that I have to achieve something. And so it actually kind of blows me away that I've been experiencing this for, you know, the last months and maybe the last half year, where things just seem to be in some sort of flow. I never expected that, but I suppose just keep waking up and keep practicing and step yes. by step, something reveals itself.
Yes, and I think that is the shift that you're experiencing, right, Janice? That if there is a willingness to just wake up and see how it unfolds, and a complete unwillingness not to make things up, then that process is the outcome, and we are surprised by it because it's not something we expect. It would be if you woke up expecting something, then it's possible that you could compare it to what you expect and see whether or not it's what you expected. But if you're waking up, if your whole life is oriented towards a process of curiosity when no, your mind is not made up, then your experience is, I didn't know this was possible. Oh, I didn't know this was possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's sort of like that. It's sort of like living in delight because I had no idea these things were possible. I just knew my heart was willing to keep practicing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Wonderful.
Gaucho.
Gotcha.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Janice, I cannot mute you, so if you could mute yourself, please, or call back in, that'd be great.
Great.
And Ashwini, we're going to go to Good News Update, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Wonderful. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. And
Hello.
Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you for Good News Update.
All right. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Carol, who is here to speak with us about her experience of getting inspiration from other Sangha on Good News Updates and practicing with that herself. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah,
I will just mention
really.
That.
Go ahead. We'll just mention.
I was going to mention that I'm in a public place. I'm actually in an airport, but I think I found a quiet hall. So if the noise becomes too much, let me know.
Okay. So far, it sounds like you're in a sound studio, so all good.
Perfect.
Totally quiet. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're going to say great topic. Tell us about what you've been seeing.
Well, it's hard not to talk about the content of what I heard, so I'll talk about the process first. And the process was, in 2024, Summer of Sangha, I was introduced to the process of interviewing and practiced it, but I found myself with a lot of holes in it, and it was somewhat of a clunky process for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the encouragement was to just keep practicing, and it seemed to be sort of, I think the caller that I listened to had also mentioned, or I might be wrong, but I think they also mentioned that sort of the same person was coming to the microphone, and that was definitely my experience.
Sure.
And so, yeah, just stop
you
me if you
like,
want to butt in.
Like each time you were, are you saying, Carol, that each time you were doing the interview process, it felt like the same, you were sort of the same person, if you will, for lack of a better term, was showing up for the interview process?
Yes, and in my recording and listening as well. It was a dominant personality. It was one that did not want to, was not interested in sensitivity or it kind of just was dismissive of that. So the less acceptable aspects were not really coming to the microphone. They were overridden.
Yeah, and almost for good reason, right? Kind of that sense doesn't sound like it would have been a welcoming place for them to come. You know, that no, not sensitivity, no, this is who we are, the dominant personality, this is what's running the show.
Exactly. And so when I heard this, another Sangha member speaking on open air after having attended the in-person retreat, it really opened up a lot to me. It began to, it was almost like, I don't know, a string of lights. Only the white lights were on. But after I started practicing some of these things that were mentioned, all the colors, the orange and the blue and the green lights started to come on the, like a string of lights.
What a beautiful image. And each person kind of bringing their piece of it illuminates it more and more and more and brings more and more texture and color to it.
Right. And I think what sort of opened it up was hearing more about how to interview, how to reflect, how to draw out, which sounds so, the resistance was that it sounds so crazy, you know, but if I just didn't listen to that and just went ahead and practiced it, other parts were coming to the microphone, and I was able to identify, well, one real person that was having a lot of emotions, and then as I interviewed them, I began to see the duality that they were in, and then was able to interview both sides of the duality, and a whole lot of nuances came forth, a whole lot of awareness about what's operating under the surface.
Wow, how exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a whole different, it sounds like, something that you've been looking at for a while and been aware of. I mean, that's an interesting piece of it, right? You're aware that the same, quote, person is showing up for the interview process. You're aware that there are these other aspects that are there, and you're even aware, it sounds like, of kind of what goes on for them to some extent. You're aware that they're not allowed at the interviewing process. You're aware that, you know, I'm doing my best here with this interview thing. I'm staying with it, but kind of not clicking. And then as you listen to other folks in Sangha, one person in particular, it sounds like, really started to open up for you. So you continue to practice with it. Things started to come forward. Then you listen to other folks in Sangha. That starts to spark other, you know, bring in more texture to it. The other lights start to come on. And then you get to really see all these different things in your own process that start to come together.
Yeah, when I heard you say that, I'm reminded of the level of acceptance that came forth that had not been there.
Wow.
That there was an acceptance that said, yeah, I guess, okay, here we are. Now it's time to let down the guard and let some of these other aspects speak and talk. And when they did, then it really helped me gain clarity on what the needs and the motives were that were fighting back and forth at these two different dualities instead of just, okay, superficial, well, we're having a duality, but to be able to see, you know, deeper.
And it sounds so much, Carol, from what you describe, like in, and the word just here doesn't do it, but in just seeing it, that does open up the experience of acceptance, doesn't it? In that clarity, in some sense, is an invitation to, it's all right. Yes, that is what happens, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm. That's another whole step forward, yes. To be able to say it's okay, which isn't one of my popular things that goes on with the ego-centric karma conditioning at the wheel.
Yeah,
but you're right.
It's okay.
No, it's okay.
And that's how we stay stuck, right? It's
exactly.
Not okay. There's something wrong, but I can't interview. I can't, you know, these parts aren't coming up to be interviewed. But in this series, you know, it's one of those breadcrumbs things. In these series of events, you're so well taken care of, it begins to unfold and you begin to have insight into the process.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost like, the way I was doing it kind of kept the duality alive, you know. I mean, I'm happy I was doing it because at least being in motion is something.
That's right.
But when, see, it's sort of like the aspects were all sort of allowed without judgment and they were allowed to then integrate. That's what it felt like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you just said something that's really, really important that, okay, so it seems like in retrospect, the way you were practicing with it to some extent was holding that duality in place, but you're so grateful that you are practicing. And that could really build the faith going forward. Okay, so maybe at another point you have an awareness, like, well, it seems like that duality, there's some sense of that being kept in place. But what you can know is, if you're seeing that, it's only a matter of time until the insight comes that's going to break that open, right? So that's okay.
Right.
Again, back to the acceptance. Okay, so there's a duality at play here. The fact that I'm seeing it is huge, and it's only a matter of I'm just going to keep practicing with it, and at some point there's going to be an opening that helps that to fall away.
Exactly. The story that was coming up is, oh, this is the same old story, why bother, you know? And so, but if there is an opportunity to, as you said, push through, then that opens up, which it did for me. There were two dualities. One was compulsive overdoing, and one was, oh, I have to get away from people. Mm-hmm. And so then I interviewed those two, and I saw what was driving the bus for each of them. First interviewed one, and then the other. And then at that point, it starts to begin to crack the stuckness.
I mean, it really could become an addictive process, right? This interviewing thing. Right? Because with each thing that comes along, it's like, okay, wow, I'm suffering. Okay, well, let me stop and see what's going on. And as soon as there's, you know, as you say, okay, oh, this is very familiar. This is a compulsive overdoing, right? Oh, this is very familiar, trying to get away from people. Well, let me stop and interview that. Right? Instead of being in a conversation and conditioned mind, let me be in an actual conversation about what's actually happening.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly, I think that's what it is. And then some part feels heard because somebody's taking time to attend instead of looking outward, you know, is anybody going to take care of this person over here? No, to be able to be doing that myself. And then that person feels like it's safe enough to open up.
Yeah, Yeah, it's so beautiful. And I see we're coming to the end of our time, but before we end, just wanting to point to people, first of all, I'm sure people are having the same experience you've been having, which is, oh, okay, so I see, right? So Carol's saying, so, right, it starts to open up other things for the rest of us. And there's that new beautiful resource for the interview process on the website, so people can check that out as well to continue their own exploration of it.
Yes, I haven't checked it out yet, but I do want to. Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah, I've seen it, but it's very beautifully laid out and detailed, and there's a series of recordings that go with it, so I also haven't made it all the way through. It's really something to look forward to working with over time.
Great. I look forward to that. Yeah, that sounds exciting.
And Carol, thank you for being with us this afternoon to talk about your experience.
Certainly. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Go happy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Carol. And welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, I heard a lot about acceptance and persistence, and nothing holds up under scrutiny.
That's a fabulous summary, Michael. Exactly. Acceptance, perseverance, and curiosity.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Michael. It's Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Yeah, I'm doing Q practice, and this whole time of the show that I've been listening, there's a separate conversation about how I am really going to be sorry that I don't have something prepared once I'm unmuted.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, yeah, I'm just letting that happen because, I'm so grateful for practice, as other people have been saying. And what I wanted to kind of report on is the enjoyment that I have gotten from listening to old open airs. Mm-hmm. And just trying to keep some recordings playing when I'm doing chores out in the garden or some other time when my mind could be occupied so many ways. And it's just been like I have friends there working alongside me while I'm doing whatever it is I'm doing.
Hmm. Oh, gosh, Greta, there's so much in that, right? So first of all, the whole thing about Q practice is to do Q practice. It's not to particularly say something, which is why the conversation has to be, well, what are you going to say if you're running your kids, right? And of course,
mm-hmm.
that we're supposed to believe that and go figure it out rather than do the practice that we're doing, which is cue practice. I'm in the cue. That's it. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm not required to say anything. This phase of the practice is simply paying attention. And so when we don't listen to the conversation and we do get unmuted, there is that beautiful moment which one of our callers described as illumination, right? There's nothing, and then there's clarity that arises. And there is something that there to talk about, right? Even if there isn't a rehearsed topic, what arises is something that you've been doing in your practice, which is to listen to open air callers and be in the presence of friends. And what most struck me when you said that, Greta, it's like, you know, when you listen to the conversation in the head, there is a reality, right? You should be doing this, then you're going to do the laundry, and then the ha-ha, and then blah, blah, and then what will happen when you do ha-ha, and whatever. And so it's almost like you're in a story or a movie or something like that, and that is the reality that you're experiencing no matter what you're doing, really, washing the dishes or in the garden. But the energy of an open-air conversation as company in doing work is a completely different experience, isn't it? Because the story is closer to reality than to what the conditioned system is doing.
Well, and it's So I was likening it to like being on a phone call where I'm, you know, one of the two people who are just catching up with whatever, you know, we didn't talk about for the last month or whatever it is. Because a lot of the callers are really old friends, and it's like, oh, yeah, right, I remember that person, and boy, I wish them well or whatever it is. But you're so happy, I'm so happy, to hear from them right now in this moment, whatever, you know, whenever that recording was made, I'm happy to hear from them now.
That's right. And the feeling that we get connected to there is one of friendship and love, because that's what it evokes.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah, and as you were saying, it is a different experience to be working alongside friends as opposed to a conditioned conversation that's just distracting me because it's talking about what I should be doing that's different than what I am doing. That's the typical conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this, I don't know how people are prescribed mantras, right? Because the vibration of a mantra actually does influence what your energy is like. I remember reading about it. I think it was David Hawkins. I can't remember who it was. But when you listen to music that is violent, your energy is different than when you're listening to something that is a higher frequency, we could say, or has a higher quotient of goodness in it. And so replacing the conversation that is the planning conversation and the distraction conversation with one which evokes an experience of love is a good way to actually program your energy.
Yeah, exactly. So I could be in a conversation about how I'm never going to catch up and all these chores and it's too hot, it's this, whatever. But I am in a completely different, you know, mental space. I'm kind of in the process of love because I do love my gardening and I do love listening to Sangha. And what it really moves me to ultimately is just such deep gratitude that we have this practice opportunity and it's available and it's made available by some really strong practice on the part of certain Sangha members.
It's a beautiful place to live because gratitude is really the antidote to not enough. Right, something wrong, not enough. And if you're in a place of that feeling complete and whole, a completely different place to live from.
What's so interesting also is, so the last time I got unmuted on open air, I wanted to express my gratitude for this particular practice, and I forgot because the content went in a different direction. So tonight, I had no idea what was going to happen, and that is exactly what arose, was my gratitude for this practice, the open air, and all of the opportunity that provides me as a practitioner to participate in that way.
So we can trust life, and we don't have to listen to the voice that says, what will happen if you get unmuted?
That's exactly so. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Greta.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. And Ashwini, I do that practice also of listening to open air archives, and it's great.
Mm, it truly is. We can bask in friendliness.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And I thought I had another caller here, but they have moved on, so let me find the next one here. All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Sequoia calling from California.
Hey, Sequoia.
Hey. Well, so, on the heels of that last conversation, I wanted to look at anger today But I was also, I feel like I'm in the presence of just a, what would be labeled as a small miracle, but this is actually, I believe, a big practice miracle of after decades of being in a conversation with the voices about getting in the queue, just coming to the place of ending that conversation and just getting in the queue. And
I would say that would be not a small miracle, Sequoia. Let's just say it's the biggest miracle in the world and celebrate.
It's a huge thing because I'm seeing it's self-hate can be extinguished in this area. It applies everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to reflect. Yes, to practice and practice and show up and show up and watch and notice and practice some more and never give up, and then to have the fruit of that, right? Wow, I got in the queue today and I didn't hear a single voice telling me what it normally tells me.
But I have not reached that place yet where I don't hear a single voice. And as a matter of fact, today it came so close to keeping me out of the queue. I mean, so very close. Mm-hmm. And then seeing like, oh no, you know, that's the process right there. And just, you know, the desire to not succumb to that, to just stay in that integrity of, you know, not leaving this human a victim to that.
Perhaps a way to reframe it would be not that you didn't hear the voice, but you didn't choose to go with the voice.
Didn't,
you chose
not yet.
To go with the love for the
right.
human being. Yeah,
right.
Enough.
Exactly. Right. And it was interesting in the last call talking about listening to old past radio shows and being with friends. And I, too, have been having a just a renaissance with older radio shows and listening to quite a few of them. And I got hooked into this conversation about that I was listening to the radio shows because of a caring more for relationship than the practice. Like, I just really want to hear from people and how they're doing, and you know, I want to make sure, whether you know this person made the, you know, just how it, just the continuation of, in a person's life that you hear about through the calls, and I was just questioning that, looking at that,
what's wrong with wanting to know what happened to somebody? You would do that with a mystery.
Uh-huh.
I have to read the end of the book.
Yeah. I do that in mystery.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's good to question, because the assumption there is if you listen to open air and you also listen to conversation, that the reason you're listening to that is to figure out what happened to somebody. Well, that's something wrong with you, Sequoia, because you should be listening to open air with absolutely no thought except to bask in the friendliness that you feel when you listen to open air.
It's just kind of the same process about getting in the queue, I think. I can't participate unless I'm doing it for the, you know, to meet some kind of standard that conditioned mind is holding out, that is, you know, just kind of some bogus, the highest spiritual intention that it's creating for me.
Yeah, so that to me, there's some standard of spiritual perfection that you're currently not meeting. And I don't know this, Sequoia, but is it your experience that when we look at it that way, I'm listening to a conversation that is telling me I'm listening to this thing, I'm listening to open air because I'm interested in finding out how somebody's life went. It's almost like you don't question, if you look at it at a process level and instead of a content level, we would see the absurdity of it, right? That how do you know why you're listening to open air?
Exactly.
Did you ask the person who is listening to open air? But we're so willing to be told that I'm listening to open air because I want to find out what happened to somebody, and that's somehow not permissible.
Right, right. Just that twisting all the time of to turn it into something wrong.
And to make participation a contest.
Exactly.
Not something you can enjoy, because I get in the queue and then I'm tortured by, what should I say? Right. Should I say it? Did I say it well? Can I say something? Rather than I'm just in the queue. Right? There's nothing more to being in the queue than being in the queue. Very zen.
Yes. There's nothing more to being in the queue than being in the queue. I love it. Okay. Well, I'll have to get in the queue again to look at anger, I guess.
Well, I guess so. I guess we don't have time to do it. Well, you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm just briefly looking at, not briefly, I am looking at, the things that I find anger rising in me around, and that, you know, acknowledgement that the things that I'm not allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
When I see other people do it. And, you know, I work in a retreat center that's got a high public persona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets a lot of publicity, and it's, you know, has a certain, and I find a lot of anger arising around folks that call themselves teachers and show up there, and when I project some actions and things that seem pretty ego centered rather than heart centered. So and then I find this anger just, oh my gosh. So
have you interviewed Sequoia?
Yeah, and then, okay, that's funny, because then I heard a voice, Sequoia, you can't bring this up on the show till you really interview the heck out of it, and you get a little more, but I haven't. Yeah. Mm. So it'd be good.
Well, and to talk about it, because that the only reason I would interview you, and we could get into a deeper conversation, but we have to get off the air in a minute. But it's that place of, I mean, it's interesting to me, and this would be perhaps something to get some clarity on, right? That you're angry because people are allowed to do things that you're not allowed to do. I project that's an interesting place to explore, but that, it's egocentric and not heart-centric. So do you want to be egocentric? What's underneath that, right? Because it's very egocentric, and they're doing something that you're not allowed to do, then it's like the obvious question is, do I want to be egocentric? Well, what is that?
You know what I saw, and this will just come to the end here, but I saw very briefly, just in this short exchange, it's about operating under the need to absolutely be perfect, a perfect person, in order to be of service.
Yes.
And that's what's driving it. I get so pissed off because these people are not perfect, and they're showing up, and people seem to be getting value from what they're doing, and I can see they're not perfect, and all I get, so it just gets me.
Well, but that's why the interview is an interesting way to approach this, because it's the complexity of the interweaving threads around the issue won't otherwise surface. So, first of all, you don't have to have interviewed the person to get on the radio show, because we can have this exchange, and then there's the ability to go interview, and you can come back on the show and talk some more, and you'll actually have something to say while you're in the queue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you have to call back and say what you saw, because that, especially Sherry's on the show, since she's such an expert on anger. So let's continue the conversation. Whether
All right.
or not you interviewed the heck out of the person, okay?
Okay.
There are no conditions for continuing the conversation.
No end of reasons to not get in the queue. Okay. All right. Great.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Sequoia.
All right. Gotcha.
Thanks for joining us, Sequoia. And Ashwini, that brings us to the top of the hour. So thank you, and thank you to everyone for joining us tonight.
Well, and thank you, Michael, just showing up despite the cold. So thank you. That was very wonderful of you to do that.
Yeah, we all do our best. Yeah, show up, and we all make it happen.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Go happy. Yeah.
Go happy.